Herzlich willkommen zum Mercury Podcast. Ganz einfach Vertrieb. Aktuell, spannend und relevant für Ihren Erfolg im Vertrieb.
My name is Alexander Walter, partner at Mercury International Germany, and I welcome you to a special episode, this time in English, as you can hear, of our podcast, Ganz einfach Vertrieb, Simply Sales, where we look across the border to find out what the future of sales looks like across Europe. For a lot of our listeners, even though they might be based in Germany, sales is European, be it through their suppliers, their colleagues, their customers, regulations that they have to adhere to, or even competitors. Everything is not local anymore. It's at least European, and all across Europe, sales is becoming faster, more competitive, and increasingly complex. To do this, to look across the border, I'm joined by my dear friend and colleague, Nick. Nick Pere is Managing Director of Mercury International in Belgium, Netherlands, and Luxembourg, and a very experienced and resourceful partner to his clients, but also to his colleagues across Mercury. Hi, Nick.
Hey, Alex, it's great to be here. Indeed, what you mentioned, sales teams are European, and I think we're facing similar challenges. That's also the outcome of the study that we did together. And of course, there are also opportunities. So let's discuss that together.
Yes, absolutely. And as you mentioned, so we both did that study kind of looking at sentiments in sales in Benelux, in Germany, and what companies are trying to do. And what I'd like to discuss with you, Nick, today is how that sentiment differs between Germany and Benelux, and maybe even make some guesses as to why, what sales teams should be prioritizing in 2025, and what it will take for companies to actually succeed with these strategies. And maybe, you know, looking at Germany and looking at Belgium, Netherlands, maybe we can even speculate on what that might mean for the rest of Europe.
Absolutely. It sounds great. So let's start, Alex.
Yeah. So let's start. In Germany, we found that the overall sales sentiment came in at 5.8 out of 10, so not even 6 out of 10, which is not completely negative. But there's definitely some uncertainty. What's the story in Benelux, Nick?
Well, it's a bit similar, although we're a bit more positive. I think there is a difference of half a point between Germany and the Benelux. So what we can actually say from the study is that in the Benelux, we are carefully optimistic. That could be, I think, a conclusion.
Very good. Carefully. So why do you think that is? Do you think there's kind of fundamental reasons, or are you just happier people than
naturally
we are?
We're more optimistic. No, I think basically there are two things that are having an influence. If you take a look at the economic situation in Germany, it's the difference between Germany, Belgium, and the Netherlands, it's not that big. But what you see is that you have a slight decline in Germany, 0.2%. And in Belgium and the Netherlands, you have an increase of 1% of the economy. So It's a kind of mindset that is different, and also the press and the media. I think that is one element. And another element is, of course, I think also the structure of the economy in both countries. We do have large companies, but we do also have a lot of mid-sized companies in engineering, chemical, and new technology. And I think they are a little bit more agile. The German economy is more, I think, based on large traditional companies. And we all know that automotive is suffering right now. And we don't hardly have any automotive anymore in Belgium or the Benelux.
Yeah, I think you have a very good point there. It's like, you know, if the automotive sector just has a light flu, then the whole German economy suffers. And it's true, you know, it's facing, you know, e-mobility, supply chain issues, cost pressures, and that kind of cascades down across all different industries. And you're right, we do see some industries like pharma and healthcare being a bit more stable. Mm-hmm. What are your kind of most optimistic industries in
Well, as you just said, pharma, healthcare, very important. Engineer-driven organizations. We do have several customers in the chemical business and also in new technologies. And also in logistics is growing due to the growth of e-commerce, of course. Huh? But there is a twist. It's I think that we struggle with the same challenges in both or in the three countries, basically. So it's interesting to have a more deep dive into that, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. And also looking at your results that you showed to me in your study, it seems to be very similar. There is intense price competition. A lot of companies report that, you know, around 60% of our respondents report that. Add to that increasing costs and the delays in decision making and also declining demands in some markets. So I feel it's more like how different industries can adapt than whether these challenges exist at all.
I think the challenges that you mentioned are completely right. Also in other studies and when we talk with our customers, we see that sales cycles, the lead time is becoming longer and longer, and also more and more people are involved in the decision-making unit, which makes it more complex. But it would be interesting to have, let's say, a pan-European overview, and that's maybe something that we can do together next year.
Yeah, I think we absolutely should, because it's fun to see, as you say, you know, outlook might be different, underlying challenges are very much the same, and yes, business has become more European, absolutely.
Yep.
So let's talk about action. In your survey, you've also asked, and we've asked, that what are you doing to tackle these challenges? What did your respondents reply to that? What do they do to tackle these challenges that we've just discussed?
Well, based on the Benelux study, Alex, we see actually three priorities popping up. First and for all, what we see is there is a lot of focus. That's the highest score, 55%, is on cross-selling. It's
okay.
Followed by new business, but 55% is the highest score on focus for companies. Mm-hmm. So they are more focusing on deepening the existing relationship rather than acquiring new business. Also, what we see, 42%, which is quite high, is also focusing on the development of additional services. So mm-hmm. actually adding value to the product or the service they are already selling. And another one, which is very important, is a cost reduction. Also, mm-hmm. 40% of our participants said that they are focusing on cost reduction, being more efficient. And I know that we're going to mention that later, but also something that I found quite remarkable in the study is that only 17% of the respondents has the intention to increase their prices in 25.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. And maybe it's driven by that point of, you know, cost pressures existing anyhow for their customers. But it's interesting to hear what you say, because a lot of that, I can mirror that from our German results. So you talk about developing additional services. In Germany, companies talk about, you know, value-based selling, which is kind of the idea of having an enhanced solution portfolio. You talk about reducing costs. A lot of our respondents mention, you know, sales automation, increased efficiency, productivity in sales. I think that the one thing that really is different is that, you know, you say cross-selling is a very, very high priority for your customers, whereas for our customers, really new customer acquisition is one of the things that really stands out.
Yeah, that's it's interesting to see that we have there a difference between Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, and Germany. Indeed, for us, the highest focus is indeed that cross-selling. It's even more important than acquiring new customers. What do you think could be an explanation for that?
I think you've touched upon that before, is that market conditions are a little different, so you're slightly more optimistic. You know, market outlook is a little better in Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg than it is in Germany. So demand is shrinking, and I think that leads to our customers really looking to new markets, new customers, getting a bigger share of the pie. Whereas in Benelux, maybe there's still some stability in demand. So it's more about optimizing existing customer base.
Yeah.
But in both cases, I think it's really about getting more business.
Absolutely, that's the point. What you want is a return on investment, and it makes sense. Absolutely, what you say. It also aligns what we mentioned earlier with the economical structure of the countries over here. And we have a lot of mid-sized companies in new technology. They are more agile. They are more flexible, etc. Yeah, so that could maybe explain the difference between us. Yeah.
And coming back also to what you said, it's really. Like in previous years, you would say, you know, the easiest way to increase your business is just raise your prices.
Absolutely.
It feels like companies don't see that opportunity in these market conditions. So it's really more about defending margins at all costs.
Absolutely. We see in both surveys that what is mentioned as one of the major challenges during 25 is the price pressure, the price competition. So it's indeed remarkable that only 17% of companies are saying we have the intention to increase our prices. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that makes it special, I think. But the thing is, cross-selling, new customer acquisition, value-based selling, cost reduction, all of these are not... fundamentally new things. And I think
not,
all
no.
of these things have been tried before. And if you go to your clients and say, talk about value-based selling, they're not like, oh, Nick, I've never heard of that before. So the question for me is really, and I think that's something that we need to talk about, is how can companies make these strategies work, turn their words into reality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what we see, you mentioned value-based selling, but there is a difference between knowing about it and really applying it about it. What we see
Absolutely.
That is that a lot of projects that we run with customers is exactly still the shift from product selling to value selling. And it's clearly shows that when there is a lot of pressure on the market, that there is absolutely a need for reskilling and upskilling. If you know that averagely only 4 days a year are spent on training and develop, makes you wonder, of course. And I certainly believe that what we see in the survey, that there is a need also for negotiation techniques, but certainly also the shift from product selling or project selling to more strategic account management. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think you already mentioned upskilling, and I think reshaping your sales approach and then kind of upskilling along that process. What else would you say are kind of key success factors to making this work?
That's a very good question. I believe there are three layers. First of all, what we see, the most best performing companies or people in sales, what they do, they worked in a structured way.
Yeah.
It's not hit and run, but they focus on sales process excellence. But in other words, make the sales process transparent and manageable. Because what
I
we
always
need is,
talk about, just take luck out of the equation.
Take luck out of the equation, yes. And
and
what I like personally is a saying from Mr. Gandhi. He said, if you take good care of the cow, automatically you will have good milk, right? And what is the cow? The cow is indeed the sales process. If you manage that well and you focus on sales excellence, I believe that, of course, you need the right product and the right service, etc. And external factors do have an impact. We all know that. But if you do that, I think you can guarantee the outcome of a good result in the future. So that is the first one, sales process excellence, you could say. The second one is actually sales enablement and training. And as I said, the number of days that people spend on training, virtual, digital, classroom, it is very limited. It's only 4 days a year. So what we see is also that the best performers, they spend time and energy on training, on coaching their people. And the coaching leads to the third layer, which is, of course, leadership. We see that in every project, one of the key success indicators is the involvement of leadership in driving change. So for me, it's sales process excellence, it's sales enablement and training, and leadership. Those are the three main issues. Yeah.
I love that breakdown, because all of these things are manageable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that is outside of our customers' control, but they're tricky and detailed. So let's go into detail. Let's talk about sales process excellence. And you've already said, we see process discipline in top performing companies, but that, you know, a structured approach to lead management, lead generation, having a different approach to project sales and account management, having, you know, with that, a clear idea of key performance indicators and an ability to measure and adapt. And I think that, you know, this is the kind of core that makes your sales success repeatable, scalable, and adaptable. Yeah.
Companies that succeed, they work on their data driven. They know what they're doing. They make the sales process transparent and manageable. And that is indeed very important. And I don't know, because we did another survey that you heard about, probably the future state of sales.
Yes.
And what is indeed remarkable there is the outcome is that AI, for instance, is not seen as a priority to develop. It's only ranked 10th or 11th place, if I'm not mistaken. On the other hand, I wonder what if we do the same survey next year, on which place it will be. Suddenly, probably that will increase. And another remarkable element is of that study that the confidence actually in AI skills are very low.
Yeah. Yes.
And that is something that we see everywhere, all over the globe, basically. Yeah.
And I think this is, it will become a differentiator between companies. Mm-hmm. Can you leverage your data? Can you make predictions from your data? Can you use your data in a smart way, using artificial intelligence, using pattern analytics to make decisions, which customers to go for, which products to prioritize, which regions to attack, and so on and so on. But you said, you know, one thing is the process and the tools, but we know a fool with a tool, we know the saying. So skills are extremely important. And I'm always kind of, you know, I'm blown away by that number. Just 4 days of training.
Yeah, all together, huh? Digital all training, together. Online exactly. Learning, classroom, everything, all together. Yeah, it's very limited.
How can that be enough? And I love that you make that reference to our new study on the future state of sales skills, mm-hmm. which we will also link in the show notes as well with our sales sentiment studies that we did. So if we want people to do things differently, we have to train them differently.
Yeah, you know that we spend more time on brushing our teeth per week than actually learning and developing ourselves.
And how can that be? And I'm not saying brushing teeth is not important.
No.
it is very important, obviously. But we've just said it. The world is evolving so fast. Things are becoming faster, different, more competitive. Why do we not make ourselves ready for that? That's the thing, you know. If you have a good process, you can identify the critical competences. You can identify the competence gaps. You can make your people stronger. We've talked about how difficult it is to hire new people. Well, why don't we make the best of the resources that we have? And I think that we can do with sales enablement, sales training. Absolutely.
Yeah, and as we said, we see that in every project that we run with customers is the leadership, the involvement of the leadership is so, so important. Yeah.
And I would even expand on that. Yes, leadership, but I think it's even more, it's culture.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have a learning culture, a development culture in the companies that we work with? Do we have regular coaching hours? Is feedback just part of normal conversations? Do we reward people for helping others? Do we foster a culture of working together in the company? And I think, you know, once that is established, then, you know, leadership falls in place and we can get all of these things together.
Yeah, exactly.
So, right. Nick, it was great talking to you. And then just recapping on that, and I think that's very important. So if you want to succeed, if you want your New Year's resolutions to become true, it is about understanding and structuring what you do, get your sales processes, get your data in order, upskilling people to work in these processes, to work with that data, and developing that development culture, that growth culture, growth mindset in the company that reflects on leadership and that really, you know, lays the foundation for your success in 2025. Fantastic discussion, Nick. I loved it. What's your take?
Yeah, for me, what we see, and this is not a new thing, it's going on for many, many years, but sales is always getting more and more complex. So it means that you need to adapt, need to evolve, etc. So for me, I believe that when I talk to customers, there are some things that are always coming back. And we're talking about customers in a B2B environment. They say focus, segmentation, and focus on the right kind of customer that you want. Yes, and be proactive.
Yes.
Don't wait, be proactive. So for me, those are the two keywords basically of 25 is focus and being proactive.
I couldn't have said it better. So if you want to learn more about these insights, you can download the full studies, both for Benelux and for Germany in the show notes, as well as the future state of sales skills that we've touched shortly upon in our discussion, or reach out to us, connect to Nick, connect to me on LinkedIn, reach out to us. And then thank you for listening. And I hope to hear you next time on our podcast, Ganz einfach Vertrieb, Simply Sales. Thank you.
Thank you.